We use a light source that's visible blue light, and it has no ultraviolet content. And we do that because ultraviolet light takes you to a completely different hazard level. We do use an intense light, though, that you would not want to just like look, have your eye open and shine it straight into your eye for a long period of time. That would not be good. So what we did is we went to an engineering firm that's a partner of ours that happens to have a photonic safety team. They have three PhDs who do nothing but look at people's light sources, usually lasers, but I think our light source was the most benign thing they've ever looked at. So they looked at it and rated it in all sorts of different ways. And we worked on the source with them to make sure that it would be completely safe.
Always ask why. Why is this the way it is?
The whole goal is to rise the industry, to grow it.
Yeah, don't worry about giving us credit, guys. We're not here for that.
If it grows the industry, that's what makes me happy.
When you first said it, I was going to hang up.
Yeah. It's not a race you want to win.
Yeah, you're going to lose because it'll be too cheap. You'll be working for like McDonald's money. Otto Minter, onto our show from Alibana.
Thank you so much, guys, for having me on board.
Okay, we'll take 20.
I can't do math. I'm a beauty professional.
Yeah, tanning. I do teeth whitening. I'm like, okay, there's some point where you got to draw a line.
My biggest concern is longevity and making sure that you've got the best possible mechanical fit. If you're looking for a lash podcast that will challenge how you do lashes, build you up, and help you create a business that not only thrives, but allows you to live a life you're proud of, you've come to the right place.
This is LashCast, your friend in the lash industry. Coming to you from the City of Roses, this is the broadcast by lash professionals and for lash professionals. Thank you for hanging out with us today. Today, we're excited to continue our UV light series, but it's going to be a little bit different. It's not going to be our typical one because in the past, we've had experts come on and just talk about UV light. But today, we're bringing on the CEO of Loom Robotics, or Loom, the company that makes the robot that does lashes. And the reason why we're bringing it on is because they use a UV light curing adhesive in their program. And we want to talk about that and why they're doing it. Is it safe? What have they learned about it? And also, we're going to give you an update about Loom. In fact, the first part is all going to be about Loom and what they're doing. And do we need to be worried about losing our jobs? Is it dangerous? All the stuff that we keep seeing people post on Instagram, asking questions and say, oh, no way would I ever do this. Or this thing will never be able to do what Lash Artist does. And so we're going to deal with some of that and address some of that. And hopefully calm your fears, because we think this is something that's really special, can do something really great. We're actually on the advisory board. We were there when this thing first started. And I'll just say a little quick story. Maybe I can't remember if we say this in the interview. We met Nate at a trade show. And he saw Tusney's teaching that class, and we made a relationship from there, and then we made this partnership. And it just kind of shows, hopefully, if you are worried about going to trade shows, you have to go to these places because you never know who you're going to run into and you're going to meet and what type of relationships you can forge there. And for us, we have really appreciated our relationship with Loom. We love what they're doing, and we think they're going to do things that open up the market, not cut off the market or take jobs away. Really think it's going to be better and bigger for us. And you'll get some of those details when we get into the actual interview. But as always, before we get into that, let's do some announcements. As you guys know, we got a lot going on. So real quickly, LashCon tickets go on sale on March 26th. That's right. Mark your calendar. Be there and be there soon, quickly, especially if you want VIP. I expect VIP will be sold out. We've sold almost 50%, around 50% of our tickets to those, and the rest are all regular general admission, which are still awesome, by the way. You get so much for the price. So go, mark your calendar. It'll be in the show notes here, or go to Instagram, or go to lashconference.com, and we don't have the exact time, but it'll probably be around 8 a.m., 9 a.m. on Pacific Standard Time. We'll post it on the website so you know when we have the exact time the doors open. Next, Clubhouse. We're going to relaunch Clubhouse on April 8th. We also have Tusney's Retention Course, which we're doing in Kansas City on April 13th and 14th. If you want to join us there, it's $1,700. We'd love to see you. Then we also are going to be at Lash Boss Summit on April 26th, 27th, teaching there. You can get basically tickets or links in our show notes for tickets to that. Come and hang out with the amazing group of people. The PLA Master Course is coming. We're going to be in Reno on May 6th and 8th and November 4th and 6th. And there's also the online version of the class. That information is in our show notes. And lastly, the course. We're going to be teaching at the course in New York City in Manhattan, guys, on June 16th, along with Tress Larson, Michelle Nguyen, and Ali Lilly. And Tusney is going to be there teaching her real kind of core idea of what her retention, what it takes to have good retention. So, all right, that's all the stuff we have coming up. It's a lot. And this is our busy time of the year until we get to LashCon season. Then we go in overdrive. But this is a really fun time. We'll get to see a lot of you, hang out with you. So hopefully we'll see you at one of these events. But so now let's get back to our talk. Before I get into it, I do want to make one point of clarification, because during the talk, we'll first talk about the robot and what's going on and all the exciting things in this moving forward. It's actually right now in Ulta in San Jose, and there's plans to do more. So it's really going to be kind of cool. And by the way, I'll give you a heads up. Nate's going to be at LashCon. So if you want to have a chance to meet them, talk to them. I wish we could bring the robot, but it's a little heavy. It's a little big, not really transportable in the easy sense. So, but he'll be there and we will be able to talk a lot more in depth about this, and you'll be able to meet him and all that. So if you like this interview, just wait. He'll be back in the fall at LashCon. Now, he does make one comment where he says at one point that there's no UV light in the machine that they have, the light that they use, the LED lights that they use. And that wasn't 100% accurate. I'm not knocking him. I just want to clarify that. Basically, it's centered around 405 nanometers. As if you've been listening to other episodes, you know that 400 is kind of like the magic mark where we get into visible light, and anything under 400 is basically UV or has some UVA in it. So, but it does dip down into the 390 range, 390 up to like 405. And we've seen that with other companies here. They've ranged, some of them gone down, I think down to even 360, 380, and a little bit over 400. So the reason why he said it, it's where it's basically centered on is 405, which is, you know, basically visible light, not UVA, but they do dip a little bit below that because it's a wavelength. And I don't know the science, to be honest. I just know that there's a little bit of UVA, very small amount, and not anything to be concerned about based upon their studies and what they've done and safety and all the regulations. As you know, Todd Harris actually was one of the people who worked with them and helped set the standards and make sure that they met all the standards and beat the standards. So their company is well above what we consider any area we consider gray or concerning. So anyhow, Nate doesn't get into all the details. It's more just kind of a general overview on what they did and why they did it and all that. And so hopefully this will give you a little bit more perspective from a company that has a lot to lose, by the way, if they were wrong on this, right? So I can assure you what's nice seeing them come into the space and using UV light or LED lights is that they've done their research. They have medical directors on that. They've done a lot of work to make sure that this is safe. This isn't just something that you willy-nilly throw in and, you know, just hope the best, right? Because they could lose a lot if they did. So anyway, I just want to give you a heads up on that, a little clarification. But otherwise, I think you'll find this interview to be really insightful and hopefully hopeful for those of you who maybe have been a little concerned about this whole Loom thing. I think it's going to help relieve some of your fears and concerns. So anyhow, let's get to that interview now.
Hey, Smart Cookies. We are so excited to welcome Nate Harding to the show. He is the genius behind Loom, the lash AI tech that is going to make a huge impact, I think, in an industry. And I'm so excited to have you here with us to share about this genius. Welcome to the show, Nate.
Thank you very much, Destiny. It's always great to see y'all.
I think we first met you, was it 2017 or 2018?
2017. And actually, you guys are some of the first people I met, probably, or maybe the first I met in the business, when I went to the show in Long Beach and I hung out in one of your classes. So it was great.
Yeah. You know what's so funny is that we took a selfie of that class and you can see you're in the class. You can see your face in the picture.
Yeah, you're in the back, I think, back corner. And we see there's Nate in the class.
I'll see if I can send it to you.
And what's funny is I always tell people, like, a lot of people in our lash industry are like, oh, I don't know if I need to go to that trade show. I don't want to go to that conference. And like, you never know who you're going to meet. We met you because you came to our class and you heard us speak, and then you came to the Tusk immediately and we started chatting, and then we jumped on board and been part of Loom for now almost 6 years. 6 years. It's been crazy.
Yeah.
So it's very exciting. And as for those of you listening, as a side bonus, this is why you go to events. This is why you go to trade shows. You never know.
I know. It's great that trade shows are coming back, because it really, there's just some stuff you can't replace.
No, exactly. That energy, that connection, that sharpening iron.
So let's get into it, because I know there's going to be this is a controversial episode. Some people will be happy to listen to this. Some will be sad. Some will maybe be angry or troubled. And we want to dispel some concerns and fears. But we've had you on before, and we'll have to look. I'll put it in the show notes. We had an episode like 2.5 years ago where we had, at the time, the CEOs come on and speak. Nate's the founder of the company. And so now we thought it'd be great to have Nate on to actually get to the core of the company, because this is his baby. He's been doing this for a long time. So if you want to hear in the past our points of view, you can go to those episodes, look in the show notes for those. But we thought we'd get an update. Where's Loom today? What's going on and all that?
Things are going fantastic. I'm going to knock on wood here, because we're in a roll lately. We got our pilot going in an Ulta Beauty location, the Cottle Road location in San Jose, and the machine is already really busy. I mean, in our third week, we were already like 67% booked, which, as you guys know, is tough to do.
It is tough to do. Business.
So our lash artists are staying really busy already. This week's looking even higher. So that's going really well. We've also had just an absolute ton of inbound interest from salon owners who own between 1 and 25 salons. And we actually opened a pre-order window for 5 weeks, and we got 137 machines on order. That goes on top of whatever Ulta's going to order and Benefit Cosmetics are going to order. So we're really getting excited about it, and we're really going to be hiring a lot of lash artists sometime soon. So it'd be great to hear from them.
So when I first started telling people that I was working with you guys, some peers would say, how could you do that? Like, that's like a traitorous move. How could you do that? Because what are you doing? You're going to take everybody's job. And I didn't see it that way. First of all, nobody's going to replace a human being. And in fact, I know that the tech needs a human being, but I'll let you share about that in a second. But I just felt that there was opportunity. The more access that people had to lashes in any form is good for all of us. It's the tide that raises all the boats. So can you speak to that a little bit about the fear that people have, lash artists have, that you're coming for our jobs?
Yeah, and this, of course, always happens in the automation world. But the first thing I want to make totally clear is our vision from the very beginning was not to have some kiosk where you put your credit card in and it did your lashes. It was to provide a tool for lash artists to use and provide services to their clients, better and faster services. That was the idea. So our whole game, and by the way, that was driven not just by our own desires, but when we reached out and did focus groups with potential consumers, that's what they want too. They want a real human lash artist that helps them decide what they're going to get, that can talk to them about, hey, could you add a little more over here? These kind of things, right? So we set out to do that. And our goal is to make it to where the average lash artist right now can do about 5 appointments in a day. We want them to 15 appointments in a day with our machine. And we want that machine to be so fast and so comfortable that we're gonna enlarge the market greatly in the US. Because here's the thing, lash extensions right now is about a $2 billion business in the US, which is great for all of us. And it's already created a labor shortage. But our research shows the total addressable market in the U.S. is $11 billion, right? And there's tons of people who are standing on the sidelines because it's either takes too long, that's number one, or it's too expensive. So we're going to be able to grab a lot more of those people. This can be bigger than Botox. It's like a bigger market. So there is no way in hell that we could ever build machines fast enough to actually make an impact on the labor market for lash extensions. It's already gigantic. It's going to be bigger. It's going to be growing as we go. There's already a labor shortage, and I expect that to just completely continue. And lash artists, to be honest, I meet with our lash artists probably 3 times more than I meet with our engineers. Just to give you an idea. Lash artists are key to this whole thing. I'm saddened when I hear them be really worried that somehow we're going to make their job evaporate. We're going to show them that's not the case. And hopefully we're going to hire a lot of them soon. So I think maybe that'll change the ideas. And let me just say another thing about it. Another thing we did in the beginning was salon owner interviews. And somebody pointed out, like, hey, you never see a lash artist with gray hair. And I was like, that's really true. I've never seen a lash artist with gray hair. And you know why? It's a really hard job. It is extremely hard. There's tons of injuries. And we want to get rid of that too, because we want them to just do a touch up at the end, make sure everything's perfect, make sure the eye masks get on right, make sure that all the human part, the discussion of what they're going to get and all that is perfect. That's what we're looking for. So I think that we're going to provide a job in this business that can last a lot longer for people as well.
I completely agree. And I just want to reemphasize what you said, that I've always said that the pie is big enough. The pie is big enough for all of us to have a piece of it. And you said that in essentially the same words, like there is enough eyes. There are more than enough eyes actually for all of us to be able to provide for our families. The thing is that there's a shortage.
By the way, that might be news to a lot of people, because right now in the industry, there's a lot of people in Facebook groups complaining about how they've slowed down. Things have been tougher. It's interesting to hear you say this industry is going to grow 5 times what it is today in the coming years. And maybe there is a little lull for a moment, but that lull is just a short-term thing. There is so much more room for growth. And I love the idea that, but people don't realize, and I think Tess, maybe you're heading towards this, is the idea that you guys are going to really open the market to people who say it's too long. The people who are like, I can't do 2-3 hour appointments, those people are on the sidelines waiting forever to come back, or they did it once and it was too much and they're waiting, and you guys provide a solution like, no, we're going to give you a 30 minute appointment, get your lashes in and out, and you're going to love it.
I don't want my lash sisters to be afraid, because this is another opportunity. The agony for us as artists is that it is so tedious, and the ergonomics have to be just right. The opportunity for injury is high. I've been injured.
She's had surgery.
I'm not saying you can't work through them and you can't get the proper ergonomics so you don't have that. But essentially, the Lash AI Tech is coming to do the bulk of the work. It still needs a human touch. You talk about putting the mask on. Most of us lash artists will call that an under eye pad, but there's also an over eye pad. So all the engineers call it a mask, and that's just the lingo that they use. But it still needs a human touch. The human being needs to talk, connect eyeball to eyeball, really make sure they're connecting with the client and helping them determine what look is best for them. And then at the end, they're assessing it, they're making adjustments, they're still getting to use their technique and their skill, but it's not the bulk of the appointment. You know, what you blew my mind was when you said you can do up to 15 a day. The thought of that is just mind-blowing, because that's just not the truth. 5 clients in a day is a really long day. We do it all the time. But so this is just
another tool, right?
Another tool.
Yeah, exactly. Because the beauty salon is all about human providing service to other humans, and that's what everybody wants. So we're building a tool for those human lash artists. It's not a replacement play, as they say in Silicon Valley. We're not doing that.
You're not trying to completely transform everything. So, yeah, like you said, that there's a kiosk on every corner.
Yeah.
Let's really hit real quick on one of the biggest concerns that people have. They say, I would never let a robot near my eyes. It is too dangerous.
So dangerous.
Sharp things by an automatic non-seeing entity. No way. Let's talk about that.
So this issue with people usually evaporates as soon as we show them how the safety system works, because the truth is, they're right, robots can be dangerous. So you have to have a very good plan for what to do here. Unfortunately, we have a genius, Dr. Kurt Amundsen, who came up with a wonderful way to do this, is that all of the robots, they're in this big steel box, and they physically cannot reach you. They just can't touch you. But they have these little tools on them that go through this little window where your eyes are presented to the robots. And those little tools do all the work on you. And there's 2 things about those tools. They have very flexible tips, unlike the sharp tweezers that we have to use in the manual part of our session. They have little springy tips, and they're attached to those robots with little magnets. So if I were to just go up to them and hit them with my finger, they just fall off. So if you're there and you suddenly sneeze and you thrust your face into the tools, they just fall off. That's all they can do. And some people are worried about robots going crazy, and they should be. The robot can go as crazy as you want. Can't hurt you. It's in a box. It's like the only thing that can touch you just falls off. So that's the thing. And we just show them. We just tap. In fact, I screwed up our machine. On Black Friday, I was showing people how the safety system worked. And I been a little one of those springy tips. And the machine didn't like it on Monday morning. So,
well, I just want to affirm that the machine is not using sharp tweezers that we use. That's what we think in our mind. It's got this little loop lasso thing that picks up the lashes, not in the same way that we do. How many times have we poked the client accidentally or scratched the client? It's just part of the job and it's going to happen in your career. Usually it's not a big deal, but it could be. So this is an excellent safety feature because it's impossible for it to happen.
I think clients have this vision that it's like Arnold Schwarzenegger is the Terminator is doing your lashes and he might just go crazy on it some moment and decide to kill you. And it's just not the same AI robotics going on here.
Well, we've all seen Alien.
Yeah.
Maybe this is too young of an audience.
The biggest problem is that when most people vision it, if you tell them a robot's going to do your lashes, they actually envision something like the Terminator over them, right? Which would be dangerous, right? That would be silly. So we don't do that at all. You just can't get at the robots.
If it comes at you, you could literally, actually it can't stab, like if it hit you in the cheek, it would just fall off. It would just like less, a tweezer hits you in the cheek, it's going to leave a little dent and at least maybe poke you. These can't do that. So hopefully anyone listening, if you see the video, I know it looks very rigid, the way the arm comes in really fast and the thing's moving. It looks like, oh my gosh, if that came in too quickly, it would poke in the eye. It literally would just almost, I think you guys did a tissue paper, right?
It's like you can blow on it and it'll pop right off. It stops.
Actually, on our website, loomlash.com, there's a loomlash.com/safety. If you go there, you can see the video where we show that the tools can't even break a toilet paper because they just fall.
Exactly. And I think that's a huge relief. So people don't have to be afraid of that.
Yeah.
What's the long-term plan here? I know you said a bunch of orders. Is the idea to be selling in salons only? Or are you going to have Loom salons?
Can individual artists buy one?
Yeah.
What's the play?
So the play now is not really to have many of our locations at all. We might have a few flagship locations. That's a very small piece of the strategy. The play is really to put it in the hands of partners who can provide a great experience and then pay us as they use the machine. So that'll be a combination of independent salons, but it'll be a combination of entities that go down to a person with one salon all the way to Ulta, which has 1,300 stores.
Got right? it.
So is it that they're leasing the tech?
No, they'll actually own it. It'll work exactly like a MediSpa business does. Probably, if you're an independent operator, you probably go to your bank or to a financing entity and you get the money for the initial payment. As the machine runs, it charges you a little bit more each time as you run. Because we're using that model because we really want us to be completely aligned with our customers, right? Like, we want that machine to succeed and we want to have a lot of uptime and always be running. So we've come up with the pricing. So far, we haven't even said there's going to be any extra. Usually with that kind of machine, you would have an extra monthly fee for maintenance and all that. We're saying no, it's all built into how many times you use it. And so that way, unless you're billing, we can't bill. So he's happy, right?
Can I ask what the ballpark price is?
So right now, what we're doing up front is we get a $62,000 setup fee. And then we also ask that they pay $67,000 in prepaid fees. Mm-hmm. So that means the fees, the pay-per-use fees, the ones that run each. So they pay some of those in advance. That's for us to make it easier for us to build the machine. Because by the way, they're going to cost more than that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So that's what the money you go to the bank to get and put up front. And then we charge $51 every time you run a full set of lashes. And we charge $24 every time you run a refill.
So what is the suggested retail price of the service?
We're trying to work with people who are pricing like the major franchises right now, which are around $200 for a full set of lashes and around $90 or $100 for a refill.
Okay, good. So then the salon or the lash artist can keep the rest of that minus the $50.
Yeah.
And what's nice, though, is what why you're able to offer, I think, these the lower prices is because of volume, right? Because you can get 15 appointments, hopefully, in a day versus five. And so because of that, you're more competitive. You can pay the lash artist a decent salary and all that because it's there's just more room or more volume.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be interesting what happens at first, because as soon as we really start talking to this about for to these independent customers and all this, they're like, you know what, I think I can charge more for the fast lashes. So I think a lot of them may go out and charge more. So I think initially you might see it be more expensive than the franchises, and then over time you'll see it get to be less, and then it'll democratize the business eventually.
Yeah, I'm sure people in the West LA will want to charge $300.
Well, they could, depending on their customer service, depending on how they process it. It's very interesting. So the $67,000 at first, there's two payments of $67,000. Does that cover a certain amount of time, or is that just to get started?
So in the ramp that we model, which by the way is way more conservative than what we're seeing at Ulta right now, what happens is you use up that credit in your like first 4 or 5 months, I think. And by the way, the machine is that the whole $129K initial of the two payments together, that's all paid back to you within 8 months of operation. And that's assuming a really conservative ramp that starts somewhere at like 25% utilization and goes up to 75% utilization over a 12-month period. And we never model anything higher than 75% utilization because, of course, people have to take breaks and it's really hard to try. Some people do make it to like 85%, but we want to make sure the economics work way easier than that, right?
Yeah, you don't have to max it out. It's like you have to be working 90% of the time to make a profit. You got to lower that threshold.
You got to have margin. Yeah. We talk about that a lot. You have to have margin in your life.
That's great. All right. So that, I think at least it gives people a little preview of what's coming. Do you guys, as far as this Ulta test or this, do you have a timeline when you would like to start launching and selling these to the public?
Yeah. Well, we're always working with venture capitalists to try to get the money to build new machines, et cetera. And right now, I would say that's 12 to 14 months away, our first machine shipments to customers.
Okay. So about a year from now, or maybe early 2025 would be the goal to start seeing shipping into salons. I actually know, I have a friend of mine. She told me she put an order in for the system. So I was like, oh, that's really cool. So
I want to put an order in. This is exciting.
Yeah. So anyhow, that's very cool. Well, let's get to now what will be our second half. And this is really part of our series. We're doing a whole series of talks about LED lights and are they dangerous? Are they killing people?
People are concerned. Yeah, they are concerned.
And what we love about having you on, Nate, is that you guys have obviously are very aware of this and had to do some research, and you have an engineer background, and I know you have doctors on your team. So you guys have really vetted this and thought this out. And if people don't know, Loom uses LED light to cure the lashes and for the adhesive that they use. So maybe we could go into it, or Chelsea can take the lead.
Yeah, I knew that you would be a good resource for this because 2 years ago, when we were working together to just work out the first version of the tech, we were using a traditional cyanoacrylate adhesive. And it worked fine. But one of the problems was a problem that all of us lash artists encounter every day, the stickies. As soon as the robotic tech would place one down, it would move the prongs into another position. And oftentimes, it would move the lash that was already wet and you'd get stickies after that. So I made it a suggestion. Why don't you guys look into a light curing adhesive? Because that way it's going to cure immediately and you're not going to have that problem with stickies. So that led you guys to adopt that. And I saw the process that you went through that. And I'm hoping that you can share a little bit about the safety and the conclusions that you came to.
Yeah, the light cure adhesives are really common in industry use, and they're known to be able to have much less ingredients and to be much harder curing, and they cure instantly, which is really the coolest thing for us. And like you said, we don't want those stickies, so we want it cured instantly. Another thing is you know how you have to tell your clients, like, hey, for 48 hours, I want you to baby these lashes, because the typical cyanoacrylate won't cure 100% and for another 48 hours. So they can be hard to deal with for those 48 hours. This glue isn't like that at all. Once we turn the light on, it's cured and it's cured 100%. That's a fantastic part of it. And the cool thing that we found out was because cyanoacrylate's been used to do this all along. That's super glue. And we didn't want to change that because there's a lot of safety information in that, right? And what we were pleased to find is we could find a manufacturer that would make an adhesive that only had two components, cyanoacrylate and a photocure agent. And it just so happens their formulation is, it's not just medical grade like we usually talk about in the lash business. When you say medical grade adhesive, what that means in the lash business usually is that it's produced in a facility that's qualified to make medical stuff, which that's great. That's really good. This adhesive, though, was originally designed for bonding the components in medical devices that go under the skin.
I love it.
Oh, wow.
So this stuff's actually been tested for biocompatibility under the skin of human beings, right? So it's a completely different level of purity, right?
Yeah, that means a higher level of purity because it needs to be approved to go into the skin for long term. You want to make sure that stuff isn't leaching out into the tissues.
Yeah.
So that was exciting to us. And we hope that that will lead to us having less reactions. But by the way, we still see, as you all know, 1-2% of the population might have an allergy to cyanoacrylates. We do still see that. We think we see it a little less, but it would take us a lot of data to substantiate that. There's no way we're seeing it more than normal, though.
No, I completely agree. I have switched also to a light curing adhesive, and I just know anecdotally that I do see less irritant contact dermatitis. And I think one of the reasons is because, like you said, there's less ingredients in it. So there's two. There's just the cyanoacrylate and the photoinitiator. It's my understanding, after talking to some chemists, that the cyanoacrylate is completely used up as soon as the photons hit it. So you don't have as much formaldehyde being
released.
You
probably don't have vapors in the same way too.
No, and it's much more reduced. So therefore, those who do have sensitivities to that cyanoacrylate are going to have an easier time with it. And for those very small percentage, it's even less than 5%, who are truly allergic, it's going to be less exposure. So that's really exciting. Can you talk to us a little bit about the light that you use? Because many of these adhesives that have the photoinitiator can even cure it with sunlight, but we know that sunlight's not great because it's got the full spectrum of UV. How have you ensured that your light is safe for human tissue?
So we use a light source that's visible blue light, and it has no ultraviolet content. And we do that because ultraviolet light, of course, takes you to a completely different hazard level. We do use an intense light, though, that you would not want to just like look, have your eye open and shine it straight into your eye for a long period of time. That would not be good. So what we did is we went to an engineering firm that's a partner of ours and an owner of ours that happens to have a photonic safety team. They have 3 PhDs who do nothing but look at people's light sources, usually lasers. But I think our light source was the most benign thing they've ever looked at. So they looked at it and rated it in all sorts of different ways. And we worked on the source with them to make sure that it would be completely safe. And what we've ended up with, it doesn't take a lot. We want it to cure fast, so we use some high intensity. But the visible blue light, for example, there's a lot of visible blue light in sunlight. So until just recently, when we came up with the curing cycle that actually reduced substantially even the blue light we were providing before, we used to tell people who would really ask, because some people would be concerned about how much like of this visible blue light am I getting? And in fact, by the way, the only part of your body that can get the light on it, besides the hairs of your eyelashes, is the margin of your upper eyelid, just the very edge of your upper eyelid, which our machine can see, and the light hits that. And we do that on purpose so that we can cure all the way down to the root. And that area gets hit with an amount of, or used to get hit with an amount of blue light in our entire session that was the equivalent of being 2 minutes outside in bright sunlight without your sunglasses on. That is, so it was like 2 minutes of an extra sunny day with your sunglasses off. Now, I don't know the numbers specifically now, but I think we've lowered it by more than half. We might have even lowered it by a factor of four. So now it's really pretty soon we're going to be making that statement in terms of seconds, I think. It's like a few seconds of extra sunlight.
I love it. But can I poke a little bit deeper? Some people are, we've been programmed, or estheticians, you need to protect your skin from the sun. You really don't want UVA rays because those penetrate deep into the tissues. They can change the DNA. So when you say 1 minute, 2 minutes, that's great, but I don't want any minutes because what I'm worried about is that it's changing the DNA. It's damaging the cells. Is that true?
No. So that is done by what's called ionizing radiation, which is in the UV spectrum. And this is not that. So I know you guys have the bigger conversation about all kinds of LEDs on the market, right? Mm-hmm. I haven't seen anything in the beauty industry where people are providing something with UV spectrum, unless it's like a Medispa tool of some kind. So the DNA thing, that's about ionizing radiation, and it's about ultraviolet light. So we don't want to get anywhere near that. So our source has no UV content whatsoever.
I was going to say about the wavelength, because that's one of the things that our chemist was explaining, that 400 and higher is where he would consider that's the safety area. Is yours rated at a certain wavelength?
What, nanometer?
Or, yeah, nanometer.
We're right below that. The blue light is the part of the visible spectrum that's right before UV.
It's like 395.
395? Because is that where you're at, or just... Is there a range? No,
I think I'd give you the wrong number I tried to do it from memory.
That's okay. No, because one other company we know that does it, they said it was 395, but they also said that the power behind the light was
the wattage is so low
that it doesn't do any...
Have the ability
to penetrate the skin or do any damage from it. It's just a bright light that cures the adhesive is what their explanation was.
So in terms of the numbers, as I remember, you want to be a larger wavelength. So you want to be above 350 or so.
Yeah.
And I think is where UV starts. So if you look, like every source has like, it's never perfect.
Yeah.
Like well, unless it's a laser, which lasers are dangerous, so you don't do that. It has various content. It's got like a bell-shaped curve. And you just want to make sure that bell-shaped curve is all longer wavelength than all.
Yeah.
Got it.
So I'm going to ask another question. You may not have the answer to it, but when you said you're using the visible blue lights, not ultraviolet, I'm wondering how, and this might be super technical, so I apologize, but I'm just wondering how you separate those. It's not a coherent light because that would be a laser. So how do you separate the visible light from the UV?
It's done by tuning the design of the light emitting diode. That's what LED stands for. So that it resonates at a frequency that gives off correct wavelength. And that's about as far as I'm going to be able to go to tell you, like, that's super technical. Like, people in semiconductor design do that, right? So the source itself has a wavelength that it likes to resonate at. And then also, then you can manage it from there with filters. So a lot of people might, for one reason or another, use a source that does contain some UV, but then they can put a filter, which is just a piece of glass with some special coatings on it, and they can cut that UV out of there and get it out of there. Our source doesn't need to be used with a filter because it just doesn't produce the UV.
If we're talking about Pokemon, right?
Oh, gosh.
And you're trying to call Pokemon are attracted to certain things. The light emitting diode just has it tunes to exactly the frequency that the Bulbasaur wants. So if a Bulbasaur...
Like a dog whistle.
Yeah, dog whistle, right?
Yeah.
And so then you change that and maybe only unevolved form of the Bulbasaur is coming. So then you put a filter on it and then you get exactly what you want.
Or I was going to say...
What were you going to say?
Not as fun as yours. Mine's boring. I was just saying that they're able to create the engineering behind it. They make a light, an LED that emits only a certain limited wavelength, it sounds like. And once you tune it right, you can make that LED go to any wavelength if you want it. It's just you guys have been able to control it to go to the proper one that's safe for the eye, that's out of the UV range, but still in the visible blue light range. And that's, we don't know how the science behind that works. That's not really important for us as lash artists, but it is important to know that it's safe.
We want to know because we're smart cookies. But let's just talk about the intensity. You said that the intensity is pretty intense. Does that reflect like the energy that is put into the diode so that affects the intensity? Is that how it works?
Yeah, we can control that. But let me just say that What you want is a source that, even if it were to not be controlled, it couldn't produce enough energy to hurt someone, right? So those are the kind of things you go through with the photonic safety team when you design a device. How do we make sure that a lot of things can go wrong and still no one can get hurt? That's the idea.
I really trust you guys. I remember all the due diligence that you went through to make sure that this was safe for the human tissue. It's so delicate and you're investing so much time and money into this technology. I knew that you wouldn't cut any corners on making sure that it was safe.
Well, I was going to add into that is so people understand the scope here. Nate's from the Silicon Valley. They're getting big name investors involved. If they weren't doing their due diligence, they were just, oh, let's just throw this together real willy-nilly and we'll just figure it out later. There is potential that we won't see Nate but behind bars one day, right? So that's not what we don't want that. So I can assure you that Nate and his team, and we know his team, they are super high bar on everything. They have done their due diligence. We know some of the doctors that are on their board that they brought in. So we know that this is a very up and up company that's doing everything at the highest caliber. And I know some people are pointing to, there are some Chinese companies right now doing knockoffs of American product or European products. And those are questionable. We will admit, we don't know where the bar is on that because they're just, and they may be good too, but we don't know because we have no way to verify it. With you, one of the things that would be interesting to know, and I don't know if you've done this work yet, is I know for some of the lights that we've seen that have come from North Korea and from Estonia and other parts in Europe, they've had certain government, I guess, licenses or approval.
ANSI,
not that type of stuff. Do you guys, have you gone through that process to get those approvals or any sort of government
stamp of approval?
Not yet. We designed to particular ISO standards so that we can get our machines marked when they need to be, but we're not really at that commercial stage yet where they be marked. Like we used to talk about UL, and still you'll see a UL mark on things. Things that are sold in Europe, you see have a CE mark on them. So we designed to all of that, and we haven't gone through the process yet just because we're not at the commercial shipping stage yet. Another thing about us is, so Dr. Amundsen, he's my co-founder, the other technical co-founder of the fork.
Shout out to Kurt. Yay, Kurt.
Yeah. We come from a background where the last robots that we made were medical devices. So we had to work in the FDA-regulated medical device world. And so we've taken some of that and brought it here. So unlike a lot of people in the beauty biz, we do a hazard analysis to the ISO standard that we did that was the same that we used in the medical business. And it's wonderful to not be regulated as a medical business by FDA, because that is...
That's tough.
be a fear, let me say.
Yeah.
But we don't want to cut any corners either. So we go ahead and do a lot of that work, a lot of the same work we would do if it was a medical device.
That's really cool. And I think that hopefully that assures people that what they're producing here is another reason why we're not afraid of the LED light, because I know Lume has these really high standards and they're doing this for like now I know, because my dad also was in the medical device world. At one point my dad actually and Nate did a small thing, worked in the same company, not the same time, but in the same world in the robotics world and all that. So it's pretty cool to see that's your background and that you pulled that same kind of mindset into even in the cosmetic or the commercial space that we're in now. And hopefully people will feel a little bit more sure that this is a proven technology that has a track record. It's not new. It's not radically different than what we've seen. There's been a proven pathway. You guys are following. I know a lot of these other companies we're talking to are following these same pathways, and that this technology is quite safe.
Yeah.
I'm super excited actually to have you next year at LashCon, yeah, because I know that the tech can be scary. A lot of people are worried about it, but I'm hoping to have you there so that you can really introduce it to everybody and share the opportunity with people. So thank you so much.
Thanks for inviting me, because I'm going to be really excited to be there.
No, it's because you guys are going to be close to your launch, right? It's going to be fall for you guys, probably about one more quarter to you guys hopefully do your launch and get this out in the market. And then we'll get to see maybe some previews of stuff. I don't know if you have videos at that time we could show people and give them a little bit more insight into what's coming.
By then, we should probably have videos of the new machines. Yeah, it'll be repackaged a little bit different look and a lot faster.
Oh, That's so cool. Exciting.
No, very cool. And so anyone who's listening right now, please go back, look in the show notes. I'll post the other episodes. You can go back and listen to. You'll hear the earlier stages of Loom and what they were going through, as well as I think Plus Tuss does a really good, I think, explanation of why you don't have to be afraid or scared. You're not going to be losing your job anytime soon because this is really just another tool, another resource for you. And by the way, for those of you, again, to reemphasize, who want to be the last artist for 20, 30, 40 years, this might be your road to that pathway to where you don't have to break down and feel your body fall apart. You can still be doing artistry. You can still be serving clients, but using a much cooler, like a Ferrari for your tools. So it's a fun way to go and a whole different career path possibly for a lot of you out there. So, all right. Thank you, Nate. This has been hugely helpful and can't wait to see and hang out with you here in Anaheim in the fall of 2024.
Okay. Well, Paul and Tessany, thanks again. Thanks as usual for the support. It's been wonderful to get you guys' advice all along the way in this adventure.
Hey guys, that's a wrap. We are done. We are out of here. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Please follow us on Instagram at LashCast and at The Lash Conference. And remember to subscribe, share, and review, and mark your calendars. Guys, March 26th, that is when tickets for LashCon go up for sale. On behalf of my last balloon animal, Tustany, as well as our special guest, Nate, I want to thank you for taking some time to listen. Keep on lashing, and remember, you have a friend in the lash industry.